Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Adoption Adventures. Hope everything is going well for you and your week is shaping up as nicely as the weather is at the moment. Of course, if you're listening and it's raining, then I hope that it's shaping up better than that. So, those of you that tuned into last week's episode, we were discussing sort of the early days, the early experiences, and I expressed that there was a particular day that I was going to come back to and do an entire episode on. That's a day that is spoken about a lot in our family. We discuss it and we're able to reflect back on it, and we're able to use that as a tool to sort of remember what things were like in the beginning and how things are now. We refer to this as the 10-hour day, and when I'm supporting sort of prospective adopters, I talk about the 10-hour day because it was such a huge, massive sort of milestone in our world. Now, I need to sort of give you a warning to begin with, that the day that I'm about to describe, it is not a nice day. It is not filled with joy, happiness and fun and laughter. It was a tough day, and it was probably one of the toughest days that I will say little dude and I went through, because Dad joined at the tail end of it, so Dad got to avoid a lot of the sort of the physicality of the experience, but I'll talk about his exposure to it as well. But it was certainly probably the toughest day I've ever had as a parent, and quite a struggle. So, quite early on in the sort of, I don't know, probably within first 6 weeks, there or thereabouts, 6 to 8 weeks, little dude of being with us, we started the day as we always did. You know, it all started okay and everything was absolutely fine. And then we moved into, right, can you brush your teeth? And for this particular moment, that was not something that little dude wanted to do. He did not feel capable of doing that. So he showed off and he let me know that that was not happening. And that was okay because, you know, we sort of talked and, you know, said, no, you are doing it, and had a little bit of a battle, and he responded very, very affirmatively that he was not going to be doing it. At this stage, we were still using techniques that we had sort of picked up from foster carer. We were using techniques that we'd heard from other people and other things, and we were trying a load of different things out to see if it would work. So what I did, I attempted the timeout spot. Now, the way that the timeout spot would work is he would sit in this spot for the same amount of a minute for every year he's been alive. So he was there for 7 minutes. Now, what little dude identified was, if he was sat there for 7 minutes, he could scream blue murder and say some terrible, terrible things for 5 minutes, and then he would calm down, and then on the last bit I would be able to talk to him and he would talk very calmly and very level-headed, and we'd address it and say, you know, why are you here, let's talk about this, what can we do. At the end of it, you know, are you happy to get your teeth brushed? Yes I am. We would then go straight to the bathroom, and immediately he'd be like, I'm not brushing my teeth. And this was how the day started. And unfortunately, it just didn't get better from that point. I think the process of getting little dude's teeth brushed that morning, I think it probably took about an hour. And that was me sticking to my guns and saying, right, okay, back to timeout. Him sticking to his guns and saying, I'm just not doing it. And yeah, that took almost like an hour. And it was exhausting, absolutely draining to do that, you know. And that's not just for me, that was for him as well. And I would have lost my temper at that point, and I would not have been handling the best possible way. And this was very, very early on in sort of our parenting world. So you start questioning yourself on, well, you know, this is quite a simple thing. Why won't he do it? He did it yesterday. What's going on here? What am I doing wrong? What's not working? So you go backwards and forwards, and in the end, we had it sorted, and we was like, right, okay, time to get dressed. And then, during that phase where he wasn't at school, we was doing, I think it was 40 minutes of work, so 20 minutes of maths, 20 minutes of literacy every day, and that was all that we ever asked. But we asked that it would be a continued or a collective 20 minutes on each. So if he just sat there for 20 minutes and he didn't write anything, that's not actually doing anything. So we were very, very strict when it came to his education and making sure that he continued with his learning. Looking back on it, perhaps we were a little bit too harsh on that. But it was to make sure that he was able to hit the ground running and to continue with some sort of balanced approach to his learning as well. So after the hour's worth of dispute about doing the teeth, we then move into, it's time to do your schoolwork. Now, unlike the teeth thing, where most of the time he was fine with that, homework did cause quite a lot of anguish, did cause quite a lot of frustration, so I fully anticipated that we would have a little bit of a blow up about it on this day as well. I was not disappointed. I got what I anticipated, and little dude let us know he was not in the mood to be doing his homework. And it then became one of those things whereby my stubbornness really kicked into gear, and I thought, you know, it's one of those times of he's not going to break me, I'm going to prove that we will get this done. And I dug my heels in and I said, no, this is a mountain I'm prepared to die on, let's go. Little did I know, little dude had made the exact same decision. He was not going to do this work, and he was not going to give up either. And this then turned into such a ferociously difficult day. You know, there was a lot of going in and out of timeout, there was raised voices on both parts. You know, I lost my temper so many times, and obviously I regret that, but you know, I'm human. We were going through a very, very tough day, and I was running out of patience and running out of sort of abilities, and again, second guessing yourself and asking, you know, should I change? Then in comes the problem of, okay, well, I'm in this now. I've started this power battle. If I give up now after he's been yelling or crying or screaming for an hour, if I now give up, am I positively reinforcing this negative behaviour? Am I letting him know that all he needs to do is scream for an hour and then he gets his way? So I got to the point where I was like, I can't give up. I physically cannot surrender on this point, because if I do, it's making a rough on my own back. And this was genuinely how I was viewing the day. I wasn't seeing it as anything else other than, we're in a power battle here, and I've got to win it. I cannot fail this power battle. Now, over the course of that day, it was not continued screaming, crying and upsets. There were some quieter times. There were some times when we decided to do sort of time in, which was whereby same concept of time out, but instead of sending him away, I would just sit him on the couch next to me. He would read, I would read, and we would just spend 7 minutes just doing our own thing, but staying with one another to just try and calm things. We tried having conversations and sort of talking through and say, you know, look, let's not have this type of day. Let's get this done. And when he was sort of in these conversations, he'd be quite rational and he'd be like, yeah, no, you're right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have shouted. And yeah, I will get the work done. And then the second he'd sit back at the table, meltdown would reoccur almost immediately. And because I wasn't starting from zero, I was already frustrated from the previous battle, my temper flared as well. So it was just this constant sort of tornado of really heated emotion. It was really tough. I know it was definitely tough for me, and I've, you know, many a conversation with little dude, and he's expressed the same. It was a tough, tough day. Over the course of this day, I was doing a lot of sort of worrying, stressing, panicking, and getting really upset. So I called Dad a couple of times and spoke to him. He was really good at reassuring me that what I was doing was right and that I had to stick to my guns. I contacted Nana. And I spoke to Nana so many times, and she was like, look, you know, he's just struggling at the moment, he's okay. And I remember speaking to her at one point, and she said, you know, he's fine, it's okay, you're doing a good job. And I was like, I'm not. Listen to him. And I held the phone up to the hall where he was screaming, and he had this high-pitched scream, and he was literally, he'd lost all control. And it was scary. It was scary to observe. And it was really, really difficult. Nana was excellent at trying to talk me through things. But she also knew that she had to let me go through this on my own. She knew that if she turned up, she could help. But she also knew that that would undermine the sort of the power that I had and my role as parent. So she had to keep her distance. And I remember talking to her about how difficult that was, because at the end of that day, it was her baby on the other end of the line getting hurt, and she wanted to help. So that was difficult for her as well. As the day progressed and as tempers sort of rose and we hit all kinds of walls, the little dude then started turning quite aggressive with both his words and his actions. So at one point I recall that he was sat in the timeout spot, that was at the end of the hall, sat in front of his bedroom door, and it was sat next to the shoe cabinet. And I remember at one point, as he was really on a huge meltdown, I came into the hall and he had opened the shoe cabinet and he had emptied all of the shoes onto the floor. And he then started to take aim and started to throw them at me, screaming all the while. And there was an awful lot of shoes to work with, so his aim got better and better with each throw. And that was really horrible. That was a really horrible moment, because I, again, lost my temper, and I sort of yelled at him for doing what he was doing. That fueled it. He got worse. He started throwing more. And it was horrific. It was really difficult. He was then screaming at me, you're such a bad daddy. Social services have made a mistake. When the social worker comes round tomorrow, I'm going to tell her that she's got to find me a new daddy. All all of these words, it was so, so difficult to hear, because this is what I've wanted for so long, and this was the result. And I was then looking inward and saying, you know, he's feeling this way, he is feeling like I'm the worst dad out there, and I'm doing such a terrible job, and all I ever wanted to do was a fantastic job, but look at how badly I'm failing. And that made me really sad to think about how badly I was failing. Then there was another point during that day, and I think that this was even scarier as well. So little dude was sat up at the table, and I told him to do his work, and he just couldn't, and I lost temper, he then lost his temper, and then he saw red, and he lost his temper worse than I'd ever seen. And he stood up and he started kicking at the table. And I thought to myself, do you know what? I'm not going to intervene. I'm not going to get involved. You know, he might need to just lash out, and he might need to just kick something. But he's kicking inanimate objects, so it's not going to hurt anyone. It will hurt him, but that might be almost like a sort of an instant lesson on why he shouldn't do this. So I was like, I'm going to see how this one plays out. So I took a step back. With that, he looked at me and then kicked the table again and then looked back. And I wouldn't give him a reaction. So he then went over to the washing machine and started to kick that, kicking it with all of his might. Kick, 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 looked at me, no reaction. Kick, kick, kick. All the while I'm thinking, he's going to stop, because he's going to hurt his foot. There's no way that he won't be able, like, that this isn't hurting him. But I thought, if I get involved, how will this work? And, you know, all of these thoughts come through your head. He then came back to the table, and it was actually a glass top table. And he rammed his fist down onto the table. It was quite thick glass, so I wasn't concerned that he'd put his fist through it or anything like that. Again, he looked at me, didn't get a reaction. He then did something, and it taught me a very valuable lesson of how quickly a child can move and how quickly the tables can turn, and how something can go from I'm observing to, oh my goodness, he is in a lot of trouble and he doesn't even know it, and how that happened instantly. So after punching the table and not getting a reaction, his next move was to lift the glass on the top of the table and lift it. And he was able to lift it very quickly, and it went, I would say, almost to his head height. And he did this, and he moved so quickly. And as I saw it unfolding, I went to move to sort of intervene, because now he was posing quite an imminent threat to himself. I didn't move quickly enough, and he let go of this tabletop. And I remember the world going in slow motion, and I was in such fear of what would happen when this glass came crashing down onto its base again. And I wasn't quick enough. I was only like 2 paces away from him, but I needed human reaction time and to move those 2 paces, and I can't beat gravity. And the tabletop crashed down onto the table and did nothing. It didn't even chip. I was in the process of moving towards him, so I'd probably got one step closer. When he stopped, as it hit the table and nothing happened, he stopped and looked at me, and we both exchanged a look as if to say, okay, that could have gone bad. Maybe that wasn't a good idea. But I then stood my ground again. I didn't say anything. I didn't get involved. I thought, you know, that's happened. I'm closer now that if he tries to lift it, I can stop him. But I'll carry on letting him do what he needs to do. He then turned back to the washing machine and he started to kick again. And this time his kicks were getting even harder. And I was watching it and I was thinking, in my head I was saying to myself, you know, he's going to run out of steam because his foot is going to hurt him. But in my heart I could see he was not going to stop. There was just no stopping him. And I knew at that point I had to get involved because that's what he needed. So as he was kicking it, he was resting his weight on his left foot and swinging his right foot to kick. So what I did is I crossed the room quite quickly as he went to kick again. I crossed the room quite quickly. I put my left arm out to his left side. And I brought my right arm underneath his right leg and I pushed up, taking him completely off balance and making him fall into my arms. As he did so, obviously that would have given him a bit of a fright to have that fall. But as he did so, I then brought my right arm up and my left arm round and I hugged him from behind. And I hugged him and then I brought myself back down onto the floor and I backed myself into a corner and I just held him. As I did this, he was screaming blue murder. He was livid and he was lashing out and he was punching and kicking and lashing and screaming. But all of these attacks were going forward. None of them were coming back, and if they were going back, he didn't have enough momentum to actually get any force behind it. So I was in quite a safe position. And I started to whisper to him that I loved him, that I knew that he was really angry and it was okay. I wasn't angry with him. I was, you know, just constantly trying to reassure him with my words. And after a while, he then calmed down. And we talked again, apologized, worked it through. And then it blew up again. And this was, when I said the 10-hour day, what I mean is it was 10 hours of this. It was up and down, all day. And it would go from we're calm to everything's gone wrong and we are going to really, really scream blue murder. And it was horrible. It was so exhausting for both of us. And it was really difficult. On one of the other occasions when he lost his temper, this was a horrible moment as well. He was losing his temper and I thought, right, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to lift him up and I'm going to sit him on the side, the kitchen side. And as I lift him up, I'm going to sit him on the kitchen side and I'm going to talk to him and I'm going to put him at eye level so as he can really hear me. We often, when we're delivering training, we often joke that there must be some unwritten parent manual that says that you must say to your child, look at me whilst I'm talking to you, because if you're not looking at me, it means that you can't hear me. I don't know where it's written, but I do know that that is definitely what I was thinking at that point. I thought, you know, this kid will not look me in the eye, so I'm going to force him to look at me in the eye and then he'll hear me. And it's a ridiculous notion, but even as I say it, it's a ridiculous notion, but I know that you will fall into the same trap or have fallen into the same trap. And I know that even now I still every now and then forget that he doesn't need to look at me to hear me. But it's just one of those things that we feel that is important. So I pick him up to put him onto the kitchen side so as I can talk to him. I've yelled at him already and it's now time to give him my sternest daddy eyes. And I pick him up and I plonk him down onto the kitchen side. As I do that, his bum hit the kitchen side, and as he did that, the momentum of going down onto the side, his head then swung back. Not massively and not a ferocious feat, but it swung back enough that his head then hit the cupboard behind him. At that moment, I watched his world collapse. I saw it in his eyes. I saw in his eyes, he said to me, without words, he said with his eyes, "You told me you'd never hit me, and you told me I would be safe. You told me you'd never hit me when you was angry, because I've seen tall people do that. You have just become that person." And I watched him get scared of me in that moment. And his cries of anger then turned to cries of fear and cries of sadness. That moment managed to break the horrific tension that had been mounting. And I was furious when I lifted him up. I was really angry with him. And I was going to give him such a telling off. The second that his head touched that cupboard, every piece of anger, literally, it shot from me, and all that came in was such sadness that I'd caused him pain, such fear that I'd done such irreparable damage, and a need to let him know that I did not intend to hurt him, and that I would never hurt him in a way to tell him off. That allowed us to calm down quite a lot, actually, and that gave us the chance to just step forward. It was then still really intense, and it was real. We didn't stop arguing after that point. The flare-ups continued, but I was able to get a bit of perspective. My mum, so Nana, I spoke to her again, and she suggested, "Look, you're not making headway. Get him set up in one room. Get him playing. Make sure he knows that he's safe. And say to him, you know, I love you with all of my heart, but I don't love the things that you're doing right now, and I need to recharge. So I'm going to take myself away into another room. I'm going to have a cup of tea, and I'm just going to have a breather. You're not in trouble. I want you to play and I want you to be okay, but I need to be away from you right now." I did that, but he did see it as a punishment and see that I was turning him off. But I did do that because I needed that. Dad then got home and things calmed down quite a lot. I sort of excused myself, and Dad took the sort of the lion's share of all of the activities with little dude that day. And I remember Dad was bathing little dude, and he said, "Look, he's in a really happy mood. Come and sit with us." And part of me was angry that little dude was able to be laughing and joking with Dad, because I was thinking, well, hold on, you've been horrible to me all day. Why are you now able to have a great time with Dad? What have I done wrong? But I thought, no, I'll go in and I'll spend some time. And I sat with them, and they was playing, they was laughing, they was joking, they was giggling. And I'll be honest, my anger was rising and I was jealous. And little dude looked over at me and he said, "Daddy, you look really sad. What's up?" And I said, "Well, I'm quite sad, actually. We've had quite a crappy day." He was like, "Why? What's happened?" And I was like, "No, I'm out. I can't." And I knew that if I stayed, I was gonna let him know just how I felt. So I was like, "Right, I'm stepping out now." And I went to the couch, and I laid on the couch, and I sobbed. I sobbed my heart out, because I saw how well he was getting on with Dad, how poorly I was doing, and I was like, this is me, this is all me, I'm crap, and I'm the worst parent in the world, and I'm getting it so wrong. I wanted to get it so right, but look how poorly I've done. And that was horrible, that was tough. Put him to bed, and I pulled all of my sort of and pulled myself together as much as I could. And I tucked him in bed and I said to him, I said, right, little dude, this has been a pretty awful day, right? He said, yeah, it has. I said, right. But tomorrow is a brand new day and we reset the clock. We start again. I said, I'm not going to carry this into tomorrow. We're going to start again. I said, and you need to know, doesn't matter how hard you try to push me away, I'm not going anywhere. I will love you no matter what. The following morning, little dude woke up a little bit earlier than he normally does, or did. And he came into our room very, very tentatively, and started to whisper my name to try and wake me up. And I remember waking up and seeing him a little bit of a distance from the bed, but sort of like standing over me. And looking back now, I realised that he'd stood just outside of arm's reach. And he'd come into the room to call for me and was nervous about what sort of daddy he was going to get. And I remember waking up and I pulled together all of my personal skills because I was still feeling upset, but I'd promised him that I wouldn't. So I threw on the biggest smile I could muster and I called over to him. I said, oh, hello, my little darling. How did you sleep? And he fell into my arms and we hugged. When I talk about that day now, I talk about it being both our darkest and our lightest day together. It was our darkest day because we went there. He pulled out every single tool in his arsenal and he threw it at me. And he threw everything he had at me. But at the end of it, we survived. And we came out stronger. And at the end of it, he realised that it didn't matter what he threw at me, I wasn't going anywhere. Now when I can look back on it and I can talk about it, what I'm able to talk about is, I now get what was going on for him that day. He was so scared that so many tall people had told him that, you know, everything would be okay. But he didn't know. And he knew that the foster family could cope with him. He did not know if we could. So what he wanted to do was push us away as hard and as horribly as he could. Push, 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 push. Because ultimately he needed to know, if I push you this hard, are you going to stay? Are you strong enough to do the test of time? If the answer is yes, then do you know what? I'll commit to this. If the answer is no, well then let me find out nice and quick so as I can get out of here and I can go back to live with Lisa and her family. That was what he was feeling. He needed to know, am I strong enough? The other aspect, real important aspect, was that he was sad. It had dawned on him that he was saying goodbye to a life and saying goodbye to his foster family. And he was saying goodbye to a part of his life that actually he had liked. And he was really upset about that. Really upset that it was time to say goodbye. And he didn't have a way of telling me he was sad. So instead he told me he was angry. And I get that. Now. But I didn't get it then. I'll be honest, that was also the time, that early on, that the thought started to hit me, that I started to question myself, am I the only adopter that's ever been through this? And now over time, as time has passed, I reflect on that day, and that is the day that I reflect on the most, where I say, I need to spread our message. It's a big part of why I help deliver training. It's a massive part as to why I host this podcast. I don't ever want an adopter to feel they're alone. I never want an adopter to feel like they're the only one that has gone through a day like that. More to the point, I want every adopter to know that it's okay when it goes wrong, providing you're there to fix it. Last week we helped deliver some online training for stage 2 adopters, and little dude got to sit on the Zoom session at the end and do a Q&A. One of the adopters asked little dude, what's your top tip for new adopters? He gets asked this pretty much every time that he ever gets asked questions, and his answer changes. On this particular session, when he was asked that question, what's your top tip? He said to us, or said to the room, don't take it personal. He said, when we're yelling and screaming at you that we don't like you or that we wish we were with different families, he said, please understand we don't mean it. He said, understand that actually we really love you and we think you're doing a great job. So my message from the 10-hour day is you will probably have a day like that, or may have had a day like that. We're not alone. Looking back on that day, I made mistakes left, right and centre, things that I now look upon and think, goodness gracious, I wish I hadn't done that. But, like I say, darkest day turned into lightest day. That was the day he realised that we weren't going anywhere, and that was the day he started to actually commit to the relationship with the family. So it was worth it. And as painful as it was, being punched, kicked, bitten, screamed at, yelled at, things thrown at me, as painful as that was, I'd do it all again. Because it's what helped him. Since then, we've been able to talk, and we've been able to address that. We got a puppy, and puppies sometimes have puppy rage. It's where they haven't slept nearly enough, so they start biting you, and they've got like little needles for teeth. And we talk about puppy rage, and as I was talking to little dude about puppy rage, he smiled and he said, is that like what I had on that 10-hour day? So we called it the puppy rage day, because that's what he had. So that's our 10-hour day. It can happen to you, but it's okay. We power through and we power on. And I can safely say we've not had a day like it since. So we're all good. So yeah, that's us. Like I say, next week, hopefully, I'm bringing an episode whereby I'm going to interview an adopter that has adopted siblings. So if you've got any questions, if you're thinking about adopting siblings, and you've got any questions for them, they're a good couple of years in. So do send your questions in. You can find us on our social media. So Twitter, we are Adoption Advent 1. Facebook and Instagram, we are adoption.adventures. Or you can drop me an email at adoptionadventures123@gmail.com. Until next time, have yourself a wonderful week. Catch you later. Bye.